What is up, ladies and gentlemen? We are back. We are back with another episode. It's going to be a controversial one. We will probably make some people angry. So we do apologize in advance, but stop being so damn sensitive about it. But otherwise, yeah, it's good. How have you been, Tommy?
Good. Busy. Exciting. All good. How about you?
Excellent. Excellent. Yeah, good, 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 good. I've been in summer body mode, so I'm starting early.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. The endless achievement.
Exactly. Especially when you love the cake and pizza.
You are the cake.
Exactly. Beef cake.
Sponge cake.
So, anyway, I mean, so Tommy, obviously we were talking offline for a bit about what we're going to talk about today. A lot of it is shaped around what's going on in the world today that we see and we experience, and we're sort of working it back to see whether there's any specific reason for it.
Yes.
You have apparently a scientific mind.
According to my degree.
Wow, sure. So I thought it'd be good. And also, we have reached out to some paleontologists, anthropologists,
yeah,
just to see if what we, you know, so we can ask and them the questions, and we were going to discuss them amongst us, and then hopefully get someone online to discuss it with them.
Yeah.
So the first one. Let's work backwards a bit. You've sent me a few articles and bits of news today. What was the one about Australia?
So, I mean, I only looked at this fleetingly, but from what I read, one of the largest wedding magazines in Australia, I think it's called White. Racist. It's called White, I think. And they're going to close down because they've been downright refusing to have same-sex marriages as one of their features or as any of their features. So they've been getting a lot of pressure from, you know, same-sex couples. Obviously, Australia legalized same-sex marriage last year, and, you know, people have been pressuring them. I don't know how many people, but people have been pressuring them to release same-sex marriage, you know, magazines and stuff, and they're going to close down.
And obviously this ties in quite nicely with the bakery in Oregon that refused to serve refused to bake a cake for a same-sex marriage.
Yes.
And they had to shut their bakery down.
We talked about this on a previous episode. Our loyal listeners will know that, but yeah,
but I think this is a different one. I think this is because this only happened last month.
Oh, right. Apparently. Oh, wow. That's two bakers.
Yeah. Well, I'm not sure if that one closed down. I think.
No, they won, didn't they?
I think so, yeah. I think they did. But the issue is, it's not really about the legality of it, is it now? It's about the court of the people.
Yeah, the ethics.
And whether it's suitable for someone to refuse a same-sex couple for them to get a cake or whatever. What do you think about that? So say, you know, you're working in the construction industry where you do landscaping, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So you go and you completely change people's gardens, XYZ.
Yeah.
If a same-sex couple came to you and say you refused it, what would be the drive? Like, what are your thoughts on it in general? Are you sort of thinking, well, fair enough, they're free to do so, and they are free to do so, right? Expression of freedom of expression.
Sure.
And speech.
It depends, doesn't it? It depends why it was refused. If you're refusing on professional grounds, so you don't like the concept or they're not willing to budge on the budget and, you know, they want too much for too little, etc. then that's fine. But to say I don't want to do it on the basis that I don't agree with same-sex marriage, it's a bit of a... It's an untidy area, isn't it?
Sort of, but do you think that people... Do you not think that it is their right to refuse customers?
Yes. Yes, it is a right to refuse customers, but I think you have to have valid grounds and you have to be very convincing to validate it, on the grounds of you don't agree with their sexual orientation.
But I mean, what constitutes a valid ground? It's something that I was watching Jordan Peterson talk about freedom of speech, right? Uh-huh. And he said, on the one hand, yes, there is abhorrent speech, which is still considered free, and you know you're allowed to say, for example, and obviously we don't believe in this, but you're allowed to say that all gay people should die.
Right.
Right. That's part of your freedom of speech. However, people then want to define, but that would be classed as hate speech, and people would want to define that. So hate speech is anything that puts prejudice on religion, race, sexuality, or disability.
Right. Yeah.
But I think Jordan Peterson's point was that you have to allow all speech to allow the free market of ideas to win one way or the other. Because as soon as you start defining hate speech, you start, well, who defines hate speech for one? So if I make a joke about gay people, is that hate speech?
It's not for me to say. I mean, it's a really, I know, I see your point, and it's really difficult ground, trying to define this and, you know, stepping on people's toes. It's tough. It's really tough.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I suppose that my issue with this is that I support the fact that, for example, if you disagree with something, so say, take this magazine in Australia, right?
Yeah.
They refused. I think they refused to have a same-sex couple on the front cover. I think that was it, wasn't it? Or published something about a same-sex couple, an article. And
I think they just wouldn't have any publication of them in it. You know, they wouldn't feature them in the magazine.
Right. So they are describing themselves as a secular publication. So there's no political or religious leanings. There's no religious leanings.
Yeah.
But the couple themselves are Christians, so they believe that homosexuality is wrong.
Okay.
Now, in a way, I think the way that it was dealt with is wrong, because a lot of the couples... So at first, let me go back. At first, you believe that White Magazine is an oppressor because they are discriminating against homosexual couples.
Sure.
But then, apparently, what happened was they got a lot of hate mail. The couples that were featured on in their magazine got a lot of hate mail. So then, are the oppressed or the perceived oppressed, do they not become the oppressor in that situation?
They do, yeah.
I'm all for the free market, right? So if you believe that something is done wrong, you just don't buy the publication. Eventually, that business goes down, and a publication that does feature all couples, no matter their sexual orientation, becomes the winner, right? So they stay in business. What I disagree with, and obviously not featuring homosexual couples, is, in my opinion, not a sound business idea, because homosexuality is legal in Australia. Homosexual marriage is legal in Australia now. So not to publish it means to you underrepresent it, right? But then I don't understand why there was so much hate speech towards them and towards... You don't have to agree with them, but I don't agree with... I don't agree with Christians who stand outside, who stand and preach word of the God and try to convert people to Christianity. But what I don't do is I don't then send them hate mail. I then don't send their followers hate mail and try and ban them. People are free not to. You don't have to buy into the idea, right? You don't have to buy their magazine. You don't have to buy the cake in their Oregon shop. I think when you start oppressing people, and obviously you disagree with them, but when you start oppressing people and cause them emotional harm, I think that's when it's a bit ironic that the oppressor suddenly becomes the oppressed. The oppressed suddenly becomes the oppressor.
Yeah.
I think
the protest should be not buying their wares.
Exactly.
That's it. That's it. I agree with you saying, you know, all right, go to another cake shop. Okay, buy another magazine. And eventually time will tell. And either there'll be stalwart customers who, you know, don't want to buy any other magazine because they like it. Fine. Or, you know, another magazine will come along and, you know, it will specialize in same-sex marriages. What's wrong with that?
Because for me, it's all about the best idea winning, right?
Yeah.
So obviously these guys had an idea which wasn't very popular. Therefore, there will come a publication which will have the idea that a lot of people agree with, and they will, their idea will win, i.e. publishing homosexual couples in a wedding magazine.
Right.
The issue is not within whether we agree with the guys that didn't publish or disagree with them, homosexual couples in the magazine. For me, the issue is more that they're suddenly silenced and they are oppressed. They're basically pushed towards closing down their business. That's like a bully, right?
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of, for me, this can only lead to suppression of freedom of expression,
mm-hmm.
which I think is the wrong way around it. We shouldn't be shutting down bad ideas. We should be promoting better ideas.
Of course. Everything has to undergo a sort of natural evolution. Do you know what I mean? And I don't know how long White Magazine has been going, but, you know, what they don't have to feature same-sex marriages just because same-sex marriages are legal. If you feel hard-pressed about it, start your own magazine. But I guarantee, you know what I mean? I kind of get frustrated with it because I kind of feel that if same-sex marriages or whatever, any of these supposedly oppressed minorities were to start their own publication featuring, you know, said minorities' weddings or whatever they're doing, if heterosexual suppression then came into play, it would be hate speech. If we started saying, oh, we want straight couples in there, then it would be, well, why? This is an LGBT, whatever you want to fucking call it, magazine. And you'd be like, well, you know, why is it one rule for you and another rule for us? Genuinely how I feel it would play out.
Yeah. It will bend the other way.
Yeah.
And I think that's the wrong way to do it. I think that, you know...
But I mean, if that principle is to be... put into practice, then if you go and buy a porn mag, you know, a straight porn mag, chuck a gay couple in there because you're discriminating.
Yeah.
Just pop a gay couple in there, you know, two guys.
Or the opposite.
You know, blowjob.
Or the opposite. That's publications not allowing heterosexual gay couples, heterosexual couples having sex.
Yeah.
you know, are they not discriminating by nature, or is it because they were marginalized for so long that actually they can't be, they're free from, I think it's wrong when you have people who are free from criticism. It's the same as saying that you can't joke about, you can't joke about certain things.
Yeah.
I think you should be able to, like, we discussed previously about a guy in Scotland that taught his dog to throw a Hitler salute when he said gas the Jews or
right.
Or something like that. So he taught his girlfriend's pug, who apparently he hated, to throw a Hitler salute with his paw whenever he said gas the Jews.
Right.
Right. So he's a notorious comedian on YouTube, apparently. I've never heard of him before, but apparently he's got previous history of comedic material on his YouTube channel.
Right.
Now, the way that, and we have discussed this previously, but the way that the Scottish courts ruled is he's guilty of hate speech and that the context of the joke didn't matter. So they said it doesn't matter if it's a joke. It's hate speech.
Right.
So that brings into play things like, well, Ricky Gervais jokes about disabled people, fat people.
Yeah. Yeah.
Black people.
He jokes about rape, cancer.
Yeah. AIDS. Famine. So does that mean that? And, you know, and I've discussed this with some coworkers, and they said you shouldn't joke about anything that is outwardly and obviously hurtful. But who defines hurtful? If I hear a joke,
I mean,
cancer, or you hear a joke about cancer, given your history with cancer,
yeah,
and you don't find it offensive, but then someone else who went through exactly the same kind of situation finds it offensive,
mm-hmm.
They have the ability then, or they will soon have the ability then, to compel you not to hear that joke.
But I make those jokes.
So the question then is, well, is it only the people that have experienced or have been touched by cancer that can make those jokes?
No.
And if you know, it's a bit like the N-word.
Yeah.
Right. So at the moment, culturally, the way that it's set is that if anyone but black person says it, the N-word is considered very hurtful.
Yes.
And I agree with that, because along with that word comes a lot of historical oppressions.
Right.
But at the same time, if a comedian says it, does that make a difference?
Or if it's in a film. I mean, you know, you watch a Tarantino film, yeah, guaranteed to have that word in it.
Django.
Said by a white man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hateful Eight. Yeah. Yeah.
So.
Because I'm not going to say that I'm completely immune to this paradox, because I would say something to, like, you know, if someone makes a joke about a race, I would sort of say, oh, probably shouldn't say that. But at the same time, I don't really get offended by it because I understand the context of it. So
yeah, everything is contextual. It's a bit like, I know that we paraphrase South Park an awful lot, but have you seen the episode where Randy drops the N-bomb?
Yeah. I think it was,
you know, it's a great
fortune, wasn't it?
Yeah. And it was naggers.
Yeah.
These people irritate you, naggers. But it featured the comedian, well, they parodied him, the comedian from, I can't remember what it's called. What was his name? Really, like, famous Jewish guy. The something show. It's massive. I can't remember his name now. But he was doing a stand-up, and he got heckled. And he just went mental. And he said, you know, throw his ass out. He's a N-word. and he's just screaming over and over again, he's a N-word, he's a N-word. And, you know, he gets parodied in the show. And his literally his apology was, I got heckled and, you know, I tried to make a joke out of it. And it's like, well, okay, not very funny though, was it? Like, there was no context there. You literally screamed in his face that he was a N-word and that you should throw him out. There's no context to that joke.
No, exactly. Which in which case, it's obviously very contextually doesn't work, right? It's not a joke.
But the episode itself, the South Park episode aired. You know what I mean? Yeah, I can go and watch it now on Now TV.
True.
And they won't bleep the N-word out.
It is interesting because it's kind of, it's weird how some cultural evolution of culture has impacted language, right? So saying the N-word towards a black person is wrong. Saying the F-word towards a gay person is wrong. Saying the C-word towards a woman is wrong. Which has evolved because along with that word comes a history of oppression, right?
Yes.
So I agree with the fact that people should be more, you should be mindful of people's feelings.
Yeah.
That's what I think. You shouldn't actively try and make people uncomfortable.
I think that
in itself is wrong. If you're there to make someone a butt of someone's joke, it's not nice. However, I get conflicted when, say, someone makes a joke about Asian people.
Mm-hmm.
I would look at it differently depending on the person that said the joke. So if you made a joke about Asian people, I wouldn't consider it as a slight towards right. people because I know you and I know that we're friends.
Yes.
So I think there's a lot of you have to know where people are coming from. At the same time, you have to know that some people may not enjoy it. So things like if I was with a friend, say, who's also Asian, and you didn't know him, and you, in a tirade of jokes, made a joke about Asian people, if he doesn't know you, he would probably think, well, that's fucking weird.
Yeah.
But I think if you go to a comedy store, or if you watch a comedic film, you know that they are comedians, so the context is there.
Yeah, and you go into it with a certain level of expectation.
Yeah, and I think it's a murky subject because I would actively say that people should be mindful, but at the same time, if you pay money and go to a comedian that is notoriously, you know, who's notoriously quite Ricky Gervais, right? If you go to one of his shows, you know that in the past he made fun of obese people with AIDS. And people with cancer.
Yeah.
So you know that if you're fat and easily offended because of fat jokes, you know that if you go to his show, more likely than not, he'll make a joke about fat people.
Of course.
So why go?
I mean, the famous one with this one for me, because, you know, I saw him last year.
Yes.
I saw his show and I'd been looking forward to it. I saw his humanity show and I'd been reading all the reviews about it as it was going worldwide. And he does a dead baby bit. He does a dead baby bit. And when he was in Ireland, he was doing the show and he got to the dead baby bit and a couple walked out. And this isn't an early joke. It's probably, I don't know, 2/3 of the way through the show.
Yeah.
And he, you know, oh, Jane, dead. you know, holds it up, you know, allegedly by the leg, sort of dangling. Oh, it's dead. You know, makes a dead baby joke. And, you know, after listening through all the fat jokes and the cancer jokes and the this, that, and the other, a couple who had lost a baby walked out and gave him damning reviews. Not that it's done anything to his career, but do you know what I mean? Like, you know, they gave damning reviews. And it's like, well, you're a bit hypocritical, really, because you're quite happy to sit there and laugh at people in relation to cancer, and you're happy to laugh at people with obesity. You know, put the fucking fork down, fatty. You know, blah, blah, blah. But as soon as something that's affected you, you know, either don't go to the show, or, you know, just fucking realize the comedian that you're seeing and take it out for what it is, a joke.
I think what a lot of people have to realize as well, that comedy comes from making
tragedy.
Yeah. Turning tragedy into comedy. You laugh harder if it's more relatable, and also if it's darker. So,
yeah. Oh yeah.
Remember we discussed that Canadian comedian who got sued and lost about a cancer kid. I think he had cancer, and his joke was, so, you know, I donated whatever it was, $1,000 to his charity, and then 2 years later I saw him in the crowd, and I said, I want my money back. Right. So it's kind of like, yeah, okay, it's a dark joke, but it's even funnier because it's a dark. Obviously, he doesn't mean it, right?
No,
he doesn't. But the kid in question said, the issue is that I got bullied after that by my peers saying pretty much the same thing. So right. In a sense that the joke may be mistakenly used by other people to hurt people's feelings. Yes. And that's wrong. But at the same time, that just means that those kids are dicks. A normal person wouldn't go up to that kid who doesn't know him and use his crippling disease against him.
Yeah.
In that way. You know, like, I don't joke about your dad dying because it's not a joke to make. But I would joke about, you know, like this joke with the comedian. And you laughed and I laughed. But I wouldn't, you know, if we had a heated argument, I wouldn't bring up your dad dying as a to
something offensive.
Because it would offend you.
Yeah, it's contextual because... You know, I've got a friend of mine, and we have very few boundaries when it comes to what we have a laugh about with each other.
Oh.
And he, we go pretty hard at each other, see who can push each other's buttons, and you know, it's no holds barred, and it's fine. And I said something to him, and his rebuttal was, "Fucking hell, Tom. Your dad, I think he just had a lucky escape, mate." You know, implying that he was quite lucky to die.
Yeah.
And I was like, you motherfucker. Do you know what I mean? Because he won. That day he won. And I laughed about it because it was funny.
Exactly. And it wasn't meant in an offensive way.
No, of course it wasn't. It was that joke. It was funny. Yeah. Contextually, he won up me. He won. I had to take my hat off.
Yeah.
It was great. And it was funny. I laughed a lot.
But coming back to the Australian magazine, they weren't being offensive, outwardly offensive. They didn't say, we fucking hate gay people, and that's why we're not featuring them. They just didn't publish or didn't want to include gay people. So they weren't outwardly offensive. But they were perceived as offensive. And this is, I think, you know, people blame that, oh, we're so divisive and we're so divided and that Donald Trump is so divisive as a person. But I think people do that to themselves. They take offense to something and automatically they become, they take a stance that's against someone who is religious and who who may not want to see a homosexual couple in a wedding magazine, right? Whereas I think if people if people weren't offended as easily as they are, and this is a fairly new phenomenon, I think, and I don't know why it's really happening, but that divide wouldn't exist. If if people just ignored it and focused that outrage into actually supporting a magazine that does publish homosexual couples, that magazine would naturally die out. And you wouldn't need to create the divide. There's a video recently about Hillary Clinton. So I think it was Fox News. They played a video of Hillary Clinton, and in which Hillary Clinton said, basically someone gave an example of one judge, I think it was.
Right.
Oh, no, it was the other one. They were both black. And she said, oh, yeah, but you know, they pretty much look the same.
Right.
So obviously playing on the fact that all black people look the same, right? That's basically what Hillary Clinton said. So
sure.
What Fox News or this other, what they did is they said, right, we're going to talk to like these liberal people, and we're going to tell them that Donald Trump said it and see their reaction. And then we're going to tell them that it was actually Hillary Clinton to see what they say. And thankfully, a lot of people, they were told about this quote, and they said, you know, Donald Trump said this. A lot of people said, you know, that's disgusting. Clearly, you know, that's a racist thing to say. And then the reporter said, actually, it was Hillary Clinton that said it. And they said, yeah, but that's equally as bad. Just because, and I think this is where common sense comes into play, where just because the team that I support said it doesn't make it right.
I
agree with it. Just because a Democrat said it doesn't make it any less racist than it was, whether it came from Hillary.
What are your thoughts then? Because you sort of made me think about, you know, the team that you support. You know that I'm a Spurs fan, so you know that, a Tottenham Hotspur fan. Famously, for those who don't know, they're in the Jewish quarter of London. If you get offended at this, then, you know, whatever. But Spurs fans affectionately from the stands sing Yid Army. Yid obviously being a degrading word for a Jew.
Yeah.
But it's the context in which they say it. So do you think in that respect that it's offensive? I know you're not Jewish, but
I think the thing is, it depends who says it in that context. If your own supporters if you chant it, and I think this was the point of contention, wasn't it? That they were initially told not to do it, and then, given the fact that the chairman and the owner are Jewish, they didn't have an issue with it. And they kind of said, look, we don't do it because we hate Jewish people.
Yeah.
We're owned by Jewish people. We do it as a support because that's, you know, anecdotally, that's just what we're called.
Yeah.
It's
embracing it.
I think if the opposing supporters started shouting it, that might be a point of contention.
Sure.
Because are they shouting
to chant?
Because clearly they're not shouting it. They're not chanting it in support of the team.
No.
The opposing
team. In that circumstance, yeah.
Yeah. But like, if I it would be interesting to see what a Jewish person who supports Spurs thinks of this, because I wonder whether they take offense to that, because I can imagine that if someone was on the street and they just shouted, again, it's context, isn't it? If I was on the street and I just started shouting Yidami.
Yeah.
In a
I mean, if you were in a Jewish Orthodox part of town, you saw a lot of Orthodox Jews with
and started shouting Yidami.
Yeah, and started fucking screaming Yidami at them. That's racist.
That's not racist, but yeah, it's not that would be offensive. Whereas I think if I was in a football match as a supporter of Tottenham Hotspurs, knowing their history of where they are, their Jewish heritage, and Jewish ownership, I wonder, like, if I think it would be different if Daniel Levy came out and said, I don't want you to say that anymore because actually we find it offensive.
Yeah. I think people would be like, do you speak for Jews?
Well, but I think he would, as a Jewish guy, he would be able to define what is offensive to him more accurately than some people who said that, oh, no, you shouldn't say that, who weren't Jewish. I think some of the criticizers of this chant weren't actually Jewish. They were trying to be socially aware and woke, as they say.
Right.
People take offense on other people's behalf, and I think that's the wrong thing. White people celebrating Black History Month, when a lot of Black people say that don't reduce our culture to one month in America.
Yeah.
Is something that I feel it's virtue signaling. That's what they call it. Like when a guy argues with you next to his girlfriend over how you're being sexist if you say, how are you doing, love?
Yeah.
Right? It's kind of like you're virtue signaling, you're pandering to whoever's near you.
Someone else's cause.
Exactly. But whether you believe in it or not is a different question.
Yeah.
I think, like, okay, say I was with my girlfriend, or say I was with another friend who's a white English guy, and you made a joke about Asian friends, Asian people, and he started defending me on my behalf. I would take that more as racist from him,
really,
than from you, because he assumes that I took offense to that.
Yeah, based on your race.
Exactly. If I took offense to something that you said, I'd tell you.
Yeah.
I think, don't get me wrong, there are definitely people who are marginalized or not as outwardly outspoken who may not be able to defend themselves. But to assume that someone is offended, I think, is more offensive. If you see what I mean.
Yeah. But where do you draw the line with this then? Because if you're in a restaurant or something?
I think it's a very good idea.
Yeah. Because if you see you're in a restaurant and you see a guy smack your waitress's ass, which she obviously clearly doesn't want, but she doesn't say anything, but she looks upset. Do you say something then?
Well, this is the thing, right? It's like your friend that was that had her drink spiked.
Yeah.
If you saw that guy do it, you would clearly knock his teeth out.
Yes.
But at the same time, if your friend saw him do it and didn't do anything about it, I wonder, I don't have an answer to that. I think at the moment there is a culture of people just ignoring bad actions. If I walk past someone and they're outwardly racist towards me, I just ignore it.
Mm-hmm.
But is that because I find them ignorant, or is that because he's standing with six other guys, and if I say anything, it's a bait to them to kick the shit out of me?
Yeah.
It's a difficult question, isn't it?
Yeah, very.
I think it's a difficult situation, and it has to be judged each by individual situations. You know, if I was, because you're a friend and I'm with a friend, it wouldn't be as, like, if you were just a random guy and you made a, and you were insulting me because I'm Asian, and
mm-hmm.
and I was with you, for example, and then some guy was shouting abuse at me, and you stepped up, that's probably less of an issue for me.
Yeah.
Than if I would.
I probably would, to be fair. I probably would. But not on the basis that he's being racist, on the basis that he's just being a dick towards my friend.
Well, this is, yeah. I think, again, it is contextual, isn't it? It's if,
because I'm not going to take offense for someone being racist towards you, but it's going to piss me off that they're just being a dick towards you. Do you know what I mean?
I think this is it. If someone's being offensive, it doesn't matter if it's race or sexuality, it's just offensive. They can say, oh, mate, your clothes look shit.
Yeah.
You can still be offended by that.
Yeah.
Right? Or if someone says, you know, if someone says to a girl, you dress like a slut, if a randomer says that to one of our friends, I would turn around and be like, do you want to fucking pipe down, mate?
Yeah.
But, I, Chrissy, who was on the podcast, she said, I don't want a guy to protect me. So if someone slaps her ass, and say we're in a group of friends in a bar, someone slaps her ass, she would rather us not stepping in. She appreciates why we would want to, but she would rather deal with it herself, in either ignoring it or calling the guy out.
Sure. It's a tough one, isn't it? Because I really, one of the things that it does really get my goat when people assume that they can just touch a woman. Do you know, it does irritate me. I'm not going to be a justice warrior for it, and you know, but it does, because you know, that it's just not cool. Me.
But you also read the situation, right?
Yeah.
If we were in a group in Bristol in a bar, and a guy comes up to Chrissy and grabs her ass, if she is, you'd be able to read the situation and either step in or let her deal with it herself.
Yeah.
If she was threatened, you would, like, you know, if she sort of turned around and said, "What the fuck are you doing?" And he was persistently aggressive, you would step in and be like, mate, do you want to fuck off? Whereas if she came around and said, what the fuck are you doing? Get away from me. And he walked away. You would sort of, I would leave it at that point because.
Of course. Absolutely. You know? There's no need to go and chase it up. He's been chastened. Done. She's made him look like a cunt. She's happy with how she's dealt with the situation.
But because I do think it's emotional intelligence, right? It's being able to assess a situation and appreciate how a person feels about the situation that's going on.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, this kind of leads into what we were talking about and Red Dead Redemption 2. I think it's being that emotional intelligence is being eroded through the use of technology, because you don't have to read a situation. The situation is dictated to you, the context of that situation is dictated to you through, that's how you get fake news, that's how you get alternative facts.
You've just made me think, actually. So what do you think about this? As you know, I've got Red Dead Redemption 2, because, you know, I'm cool. Apparently, I was talking to it is amazing. It's absolutely fucking phenomenal. I've never seen anything like it in my life. A friend of mine at work also plays it. And he's younger than me, so he likes to go on YouTube and stuff and watch videos and stuff that I don't really do. And he told me about a video. So a YouTuber had all of his videos removed, okay, because in the game, so in Red Dead, he found a suffragette, and she was preaching in the town, and he Molotov cocktailed her. So he, in the game, you know, in a game where it's okay to do it, because it's a game, he stood in front of her, lit a Molotov cocktail, and threw it at her, and, you know, and he posted it on YouTube, and he got his entire YouTube account suspended, like gone, because it was deemed offensive. What do you think to that?
That's a difficult one.
Because I watched the video and I thought it was funny in the context of the game. Do you know what I mean? Because I've played the game. I know what it's like. You know, it's no different to, say, like GTA 3, 4 or 5, driving up to a hooker, sleeping with them, and then smacking them over the head with a baseball bat and stealing your money back.
I know what you mean. I know what you mean. And this is something actually that you've raised.
When we were just want to clarify. In game, not in real life.
But this is something that we've, when we're talking about what to discuss on the podcast, this is something that you've raised. How games can be a vehicle for moral education.
For a moral compass. Yeah.
In the sense that we find it funny, but we would never do that.
Of course.
In real life. But there will be some fucking idiots that will do that. And this is what technology has allowed us. It's allowed us to spread a message simultaneously to hundreds of millions of people at the same time. And some people, now it's not about like-minded people sharing like-minded content and knowing the boundaries of it. You're now sharing your content with people that are not like-minded. You know, people that may find it not only funny to throw Molotov cocktail at a suffragette or a feminist, as they would be known now.
Yeah.
But also in the game, but also to do physical harm to a feminist in real life. And I think, you know, like how, you remember in Call of Duty, I think it was 2 or 3, where it was an undercover Russian agent. You were supposed to be an undercover Russian agent, and you were in an airport, and the message is,
yes,
no one stays alive. And you're going out and you're shooting everyone who is
with a light machine gun,
and you're massacring people in an airport, just civilians. I think that scene now would never be allowed to be published in a game.
I agree.
And it's
at the same time, it really does have quite a valid message.
But that's something that we appreciate because we're normal. If you have a psychopath who does it and is easily convinced that that is a good way to do it, he might actually turn a gun, especially in the States where guns are readily available. He might be able to turn that fantasy into reality. And that's what a game is. It's a fantasy, isn't it? In Red Dead Redemption 2, you're playing as a cowboy who rides around this fictional world and does things. You know, you can punch a horse, you can kill a dog, you can
do whatever the fuck you want.
Exactly. So I think they are. This is where it gets difficult, isn't it? Because is your freedom of expression and speech getting marginalized for the sake of someone's psychology and psychological well-being?
Sure.
But then I think It's a fucking gray area, because should you then not be concentrating on targeting and curing people with psychological health issues?
Of course.
You know, like your question is, or your question yesterday was, are games becoming, you know, should they be used as a moral compass for kids? And even though they shouldn't, it doesn't mean that it isn't being used as a moral compass for kids. So people might be driving around town thinking that stealing a car, people might be playing GTA and thinking that stealing a car and running people over is funny.
Yeah.
But then how far do you go before you do it in real life?
Well, though, it was parodied in a... Did you ever watch Misfits?
No, but I know about the show.
So there was an episode where there was a guy who literally thought he was a character. He thought he was the main protagonist in GTA 3 or something. And when you look at things from his perspective, it's very similar to the game. Do you know what I mean? Like, he'll kill someone and then their money will float above their head and he'll go and collect it. And it was really interesting, actually, because obviously that was touching on the points that we're talking about now. But, you know, when I play those games, I play them just for the enjoyment, just because I know what it is. It's a game. I can go and fucking get drunk or sniff cocaine and then run around in a forest and shoot squirrels all day long. Do you know what I mean? I don't do that, but if I wanted to, I could.
Yeah.
You know what I mean, the possibility is there. I don't need to do that, but, you know, I will confess that in like GTA or something, just for the sheer fuck of it, I've gone on top of a building with a rocket launcher, blown up every car that I can see that is driving past me, waited till helicopters are going to come and get me, blown those motherfuckers up, and keep doing the cheat for infinite ammo. Do you know what I mean? Until I get killed. Just because it's, you know, why not? Doesn't mean that I'm going to go out in real life, get 5 crates of RPGs and jump up on the roof and start, you know, blowing people up.
But how much is it? How much is it a responsibility of a parent to teach the moral compass, and how much is it actually, parents leaving kids to being lazy and letting their kids and not nurturing their kids to understand what is wrong and what is right?
I really think that it needs to be a lot more difficult for a kid to play the game that's violent. Obviously, the parents have a very high responsibility in shaping a child's compass, moral compass, as do the child's peers, like teachers and whatever.
But you can't trust them, can you? You can't trust
people
to take care of their own kids. So you're right, it gets to a point where, and this is what we talked about, it gets to a point where a company, an enterprise, has to make that decision, or a government has to employ those laws. That's why, what's his name? Alex, the guy that was banned from Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook.
Oh, yeah, I can't remember his name, but yeah, go on.
Fucking hell. Anyway, he's a massive conspiracy theorist, blah, 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 blah. He was banned from all those platforms. They had to take the moral stand against it. So you sort of, I think the way that they should do it is they should have fingerprint sensors on the controller, right? And you register your fingerprint sensor as you register your console, so it knows who's playing. And if a 14-year-old you or a 10-year-old you gets the controller, it knows that some games cannot be played. It just doesn't play them. But it's sad that, you know, it is sad that a company has to make that parental decision.
Yeah.
I wasn't allowed to play violent games for a long time. But then again, I was nurtured by my parents to understand that violence is wrong. And needless violence is even more wrong.
Of course. So I had violent games. I had
Tekken.
GoldenEye when that came out.
Yeah.
That came out, years and years ago.
Mortal Kombat,
Street Fighter. Do you know what I mean? I had violent games and I grew up playing these, the games, and obviously they got more violent as the computers got more powerful. But I was also always able to differentiate.
But I think the issue is that there are some people who can't. And the more people take, are nurtured by technology rather than their parents, the more they will learn their moral compass develop with those games. I think in a way, if you needlessly, maybe what they could do to teach people the moral compass, if you needlessly kill someone or hurt someone, you actually get sent to jail, or you get your whatever deducted, or the game teaches you the moral compass, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. But the thing is, in Red Dead and GTA, you do get arrested.
Right.
The police do come after you.
Right.
So, that moral teaching is there. You know what I mean? And they've even gone one step further. Go on.
But you can get away from that. You can outrun the police, you can blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Sorry, you were saying?
Well, I was just going to say they've gone one further by inducting what they call the honor system. So if you do more good deeds and don't just cold-heartedly kill people, people are nicer to you and do you favors, et cetera, et cetera. If you're a cold-hearted son of a bitch, then, you get marginalized from society, essentially, in the game. People are scared of you and won't let you in their shops, etc. So, you get discriminated against for being a cunt.
So it's antisocial behavior that if you exhibit antisocial behavior, you get punished in the game for it. But what about kids? And this is something that I've seen lately. So I was walking down in Manchester and on a high street, and some kids were I think they stole something from a shop, and they were, so that the owner was trying to get them in to pay for all their stuff, and the kids were taking the piss, basically throwing drink at him. They were shouting racist abuse at him. They were swearing at him. Some people just want to be antisocial. So even though they have that moral compass, my question is, how do you stop that behavior? Because some people want to be antisocial. So how do you prevent them from, or is it the fact that some people will just find a way no matter what it is?
Yeah, I think it's the latter there. I think people will always find a way to be, if they want to be a prick, then they'll find a way. There's not really much you can do to stop it. Unless you subject countless people to, really tough mental tests.
But then how do you, should the game, can the game affect it?
What do you mean, sorry? Can the game affect people's real compasses?
Well, no, can the game change the mindset of an antisocial person?
Possibly. I've never really thought about it before, but if they're not going to learn a lesson in real life from repercussions of anything that they've done, then it's going to be really difficult to make them learn something in a digital world, I think. I don't know. It's an interesting one. It's really interesting.
That kind of leads us to things like AI. Can you teach AI a moral compass?
Yeah, I mean, how do you do it? How do you program a moral compass? What are your what are your factors there? What are you putting in that's okay? And then we talked about Asimov's law or Asimov's laws, etc.
In relation to self-driving cars, right? How do you solve that philosophical conundrum of do you kill one person or two people?
Yeah.
Either way, it's wrong.
Yes. Well, it's not that. It's one person or four.
Well, yeah.
In the car. But, you know, go on.
Just, I suppose, there is no easy answer for this, is there? Because if, no matter what you do, you get criticized. If Red Dead Redemption issued a game which was more educational, because people play a game to escape from reality, right? As a hobby.
Yeah.
You play it because it's fun. You don't play it to learn stuff. It might have historical accuracies, like in Assassin's Creed.
Yeah.
Where you play in like Renaissance times and, you know, a story unfolds.
Yeah.
It's fairly accurate. But equally, the main point of a game is to unwind and relax and have fun.
Sure.
So do you think companies will get criticized more if suddenly what they started to do is release parenting games, essentially? I think they will, because people like you and I would look at it and think, well, what the... I want it to be unrealistic. I want it to be unrealistic to a point that I can have multiple ammo, I can walk around, get a prostitute, sleep with a killer, steal all their money, get chased by police, blow up the police, you know, escape a 6-star rating, blah, 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 go and steal a jet. You kind of, you want to do stuff that you just would not be able to do in real life just because it's fun.
Yeah. Yeah, of course. It is fun. Do you know what I mean? I'm never going to break into a military base and steal an Apache attack helicopter or a fast jet. But in GTA, I can fucking do that because the fence is 8 foot high. I can park my car next to it, climb on top of the car, climb on top of the fence. And then I can do a cheat, get a really fast car, drive to the fast jet that I want, jump in it, and off I fuck.
So should...
It's never happened in real life.
So then the question is, should games be less about realism as they are now? Right? Red Dead Redemption, probably one of the most realistic games I've heard. I've never played it, but I've heard it's probably one of the most realistic, true-to-life games that you can have. You walk past people and they have conversations and they remember you and, you know, you form relationships with people. Or should they be more about things like Mario, where it's completely plumber that walks around, mushrooms attacking, blah blah blah.
It's horses for courses. If that's your cup of tea, then play it. Do you know what I mean? There's a market for that. I can play, I don't know, Skyrim. I'm a big fan of Skyrim. I don't know if you've heard of Skyrim. It's a fantasy game. You know, where it's open world, it's fantastic, it's immersive, but there's vampires, you can become a werewolf, there's fucking dragons and blah, 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 blah. You know, it's realistic up until the point that you realize that it's basically Lord of the Rings on steroids.
Mm.
But, you know, I like that. I like that I can come home from a hard week's work, if it's raining and, you know, the missus is out, I can bang that on for an hour, lose myself, drink a beer, and think, oh, I can fucking chill out now. Let's go to fucking Oblivion. Because it's not real and it doesn't matter what I do there.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's kind of... It's an interesting dilemma for games designers. Because no one ever questions FIFA about their moral compass. Right?
Of course.
But people would question the moral compass of Call of Duty or of Grand Theft Auto or of Redemption 2 because it tries to emulate real life. And it emulates real life in terms of violence.
Yeah.
And I think that's where lines get blurred. Just moving along from that, topic. I know that we discussed last time to talk about, I'm reading a book called Sapiens. By the way, did you get it in the end?
I didn't know. I didn't get a chance.
And in the book Sapiens, it basically walks you through, in the first chapter, walks you through evolution of man from an ape to Homo erectus to Homo sapien to Homo whatever. Mm-hmm. And it poses an interesting question of, was it a replacement? Was it domination of Homo sapiens? Or was it interbreeding between Homo sapiens and Homo erectus? And I know we discussed this because there's some interesting implications. If there was a merging of Homo erectus, Homo sapien, and the other Homo genus,
yeah,
then there would be genetic, racial shortcomings and advantages depending on which is which. Whereas if it was a replacement theory, i.e. Homo sapiens dominated, and therefore that gene is bred out of the human beings, i.e. you know, they killed all the Homo erectus, and therefore that gene, the Homo erectus gene, would not be able to get through to the Homo sapien genes.
Yeah.
It kind of makes it a much easier concept because it means there are no, we're all equal, first of all, everyone's a Homo sapien. And secondly, the physical and intellectual and mental shortcomings and advantages are just evolutions of your territory. So people in the Nordic countries are taller, more susceptible to surviving in cold. People in Africa have darker skin because you know, their melanin count is higher.
Mm-hmm.
Because what Yuval Harari says is that if it's the interbreeding of those species that is the theory, then there are, it's more explosive because Homo erectus wasn't as intelligent as Homo sapien, which is why people mm-hmm. think that they went extinct. But if they interbred, if Homo erectus and Homo sapien interbred, then that means that there may be potential shortcomings for that particular race. And he brings in the idea that if you take the Aboriginals who were, who didn't meet a white man until 1800s, is that when Australia?
17, I think.
So 1700s, 18th century. Is that because, you know, given the fact that they had the same amount of time on Earth as the Western white people, mm-hmm. why haven't they developed the technology, and why weren't they at the stage of cultural and technical evolution as the West? Why is it that the white mm-hmm. man dominated for so long? And your point was quite interesting about the white male domination. Just the white race.
Sure. I think I can't remember what we said now, but was it that it was driven by war?
Yeah. So, I mean, but you also said, isn't it now that the, because I sort of said, you know, their technological advances were much more efficient and effective in taking over and propelling them to the top of the race chart. But then you brought in the Asian.
I honestly can't remember. I can't remember.
You brought in the Chinese and said, well, they were massively... ahead of their surrounding neighbors in terms of technological advances. But...
at that time, yeah.
You know... I suppose I don't know enough about it, but how long did the Egyptians reign, and why, you know, same with the Romans, they just died out essentially.
The Roman Empire collapsed, didn't it? And I don't know why the Egyptians declined as they did, But, you know, it is interesting, now that you've reminded me of what I actually said. It is really interesting because, you know, we've only just figured out how they built the pyramids and, you know, the mathematical precision and the, you know, the, yeah, definitely. Just aliens. That's it. Done. Next. And if you could stop saying grey areas, because that's offensive to aliens.
but it is an interesting concept that if it was a merging of the Homo sapien and the Homo erectus, and Homo erectus being the more primitive and Homo sapien being the more culturally enlightened and intellectually enlightened, does that not... Because no matter how we splice it, and don't get me wrong, I don't discriminate either way, there are genetic advantages and disadvantages to different races.
Yeah.
You know, obviously this is going to be very explosive if we start elaborating on this. But, you know, it's like, why is it that the Aboriginals are more primitive than the Americans? Not the Native Americans, but the white American.
Yeah, the trans-European Americans.
Yeah. Well, why is it? That's what I want to know. And is it the fact that they haven't naturally evolved their culture, their technology, and actually if you try and drag them into the 21st century concept of technology and culture, that they start to reject it because they just can't grasp the concept? It's not really understanding the concept. I'm sure they understand. Well, maybe they don't, but it's a bit like, you know, why isn't... Okay, so I'm going to give you an example from myself. Kazakhstan was a predominantly tribal culture.
Right.
Right, and up until, not very long, up until, I would say, 20th century, maybe 19th at the most, they were tribal. They had no concept. Mongolia and Kazakhstan, Uzbekistan, Tajikistan, they had no concept of territory.
Right.
They would traverse steppe and desert and settle and then move and then settle again and then move. So they don't know the concept of passports, of nationalism, of territory. So
yeah,
this was really brought on by the Soviet Union. So once the Russians unified those countries, they imposed the concept of territory.
Mm-hmm.
Because they outlined the countries. And they said, right, even though we're all one territory, you are from Kazakhstan, this is your territory. You are from Uzbekistan, this is your country.
Yeah.
So, and it's the same with the Middle East. I'm pretty sure that prior to the Brits and the French splitting the Middle East and drawing arbitrary lines during the imperialist times, the Middle Eastern tribes, obviously the Saudi royal family, wasn't always at the helm of Saudi Arabia.
Well, no, they were caravanners, weren't they?
Exactly, exactly. So is it that actually the Western concept of democracy, and this is, sorry, a very long point, but my point is that is the concept of Western democracy just incompatible with those people until such time that they evolve culturally and intellectually to that naturally?
I would say yes, and it's always been, I've always thought it's been a valid point that I've held, that when you see other nations at war with each other, so in turmoil, take the Middle East, for example, or take, you know, Afghanistan, whatever, you know, they have turmoil in their own countries and, you know, with their own peoples, they're having wars. But then we step in and we say, actually, no, this isn't good enough. You know, you're treating your people badly, blah, 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 blah. we didn't get to where we are by making daisy chains and picking flowers for each other. You know what I mean? We got to this point by dominating the planet, ruthlessly slaughtering people, you know what I mean? Bending people to our will and imposing our beliefs and our rights onto to foreign people, to alien people. So surely it's a bit hypocritical to not allow another culture that we don't have anything to do with other than we share a planet with them. Surely it's hypocritical of us to not allow them to evolve naturally as we have. I'm not agreeing with the war. I'm just saying war is natural, and it's a natural way for a country to iron itself out, for better or worse.
Well, I always thought this, right? When was the English Civil War? 1600?
Yeah.
Something like that?
Yeah.
The American Civil War was 18th century?
Yeah, 19th century.
1776, wasn't it? Civil War.
Oh, no, you're right. It was, yeah. 18th century, sorry.
So you get to a point where they got to their, you know, the Brits and the Americans got to their chosen system of government through civil war now. But they did it 400 years ago, 600 years ago. What we see is actually a lot of the countries in the Middle East that America is trying to put their fingers in, they are inducing. So the Western, so let's take the British. The British Civil War began because there were two sides of opposition for government, wasn't there? There was the Royalists and the non-Royalists, essentially. And they kind of, because they didn't agree on the way to govern or to be governed, they had a war, and the winning side became the Parliament, led by Oliver Cromwell, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
You have as a natural progression into, through conflict, but natural progression from a king reigning the country to a Parliament reigning the country.
Sure.
But this was a natural boil over. What you have in the Middle East at the moment is that an induced way of getting the people to select the government.
Yeah.
And I think that is only going to lead to people taking advantage of the situation and
of course
not really understanding what they want. Because look at it this way. Egypt is a perfect example of this. Arab Spring in Egypt, they didn't like Mubarak and his oppressive ways. They went to the streets, they marched, and now there's a Islamic Brotherhood military power that's in government. So people took advantage of that. The military took advantage of it and imposed themselves as the rulers.
Mm-hmm.
But this was, if you believe in conspiracy theories, induced by the Americans. Same with Libya, same with Syria, same with Afghanistan, same with, you know, where else? Lebanon. And you kind of think, well, if you induce something because you believe it is the right thing to do, does it actually make evolutionary sense? Or should the people get to that point naturally? So I'm not saying that I agree with Saddam killing thousands of people because they're rule. But if you look at Iraq now, and if you look at Iraq 20 years ago, it wasn't the same country. It was a much more, first of all, intact. There were fewer terrorist attacks.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, okay, if you, like, I'll bring an example of a friend of mine who's from Syria. And I said to him, I asked him the question of, which is better? Do you think it will get better? Or do you think that it was better under the rule of Assad? And he said, you know what? If you didn't oppose his regime, if you weren't outwardly critical of his regime, you didn't get touched. Yes, it was corrupt. Yes, it was difficult for some people to break into the government or to become rich. But people knew the system. Now you have different factions, so they reverted back to tribal leadership, and each part right. of leadership wants to be the ultimate leader of the country.
So they've transgressed.
Yeah. So what he's saying is that it was looking back at it now, and hindsight's always beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Being under the Saddam regime was much more peaceful than it is now, clearly.
Right.
And although he's not a huge supporter of Assad in general, he is the lesser of two evils. But the issue is that he says, if we would have got there in the end. We would have got to a democratic rule, because naturally we would evolve from one family having all the power to someone who's within the Assad family taking power, yeah. not being suitable, then being kicked off, blah, blah, blah.
Naturally
progressed to a democratic rule. But the issue is that Syria as a country didn't exist in 1900s, 1800s.
Mm-hmm.
It was a tribe of people who shared a land.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I can sympathize, and I really do agree. I'm not an expert in the field, obviously.
No.
But I can
complete bullshit.
I can appreciate his point.
No, bullshit. Complete conjecture. I mean, we don't know what we're talking about, but it's just thinking about it logically. Like, I think some countries need to go through the turmoil, and no matter how hard it seems.
I think all countries do, though. I mean, look what we've gone through, civil wars, and yet we still have a monarchy, and we're able to vote our leaders in, or as much as we're told that we're allowed to, if you believe in conspiracy theories.
But this is it. We, in the UK, arrived to a system through conflict, and out of that conflict became a system where both can coexist.
Yeah.
The monarchy can coexist, but it has no direct power and governing power. Symbolic, yes, but nothing actual. But we did that 300 years ago through blood, sweat, and tears.
Yeah.
And that progress has been natural, in the sense that in complete opposition to how it's being done in Iraq. I mean, you know, George W. Bush wanted to bring democracy to the Iraqi people. Why? Why? Do they want it? Yeah, I'm sure they do. I'm sure they look at the States and think, oh, that's amazing. But what America has and what Iraq doesn't have is a unified system where people are not allowed, and people, America's a secular country, right? I think,
mm-hmm.
as far as I can believe. Whereas, from what I understand, Iraq was always an Islamic country.
Yeah.
And what you have within Islam is different sides of belief who think that...
Well, Sunni and Shia.
Exactly. Who believe that they are the rightful descendants of the Prophet.
Yeah.
And therefore have a much better claim to ruling the others.
So do you think then, this, you've raised a relatively interesting question in that, do you think that the religion of the people at hand could potentially dictate the evolution of their social standings?
Absolutely.
So, you know, look what England did. Henry VIII, we were Catholic, and then he made the Church of England.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. If you look at Catholicism in general, if you look at the Renaissance Italy, when it was governed by the Catholics, the Catholic families, so the Catholic elite families, Borgias, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, yeah.
they absolutely divided the country into a hierarchy.
Yeah. But the thing is, the social and political environment that they're in is going to be different, isn't it? Because you're not going to get people in Catholic or Christian faiths, really, discriminating over whose version of Christianity is correct.
Well, no, but
whereas
they did, didn't they? Because that's what happened with Martin Luther.
Go on.
Well, he was a Protestant who disagreed with the beliefs of the church, of the Catholic Church. He nailed some reforms on a Catholic Church, famously, and hence Protestants were born. And Germany is now a Protestant, a majority of Protestant country, I believe. There were factions within Christianity that absolutely fought for power. King Henry VIII, as you mentioned, disagreed with the church for his own personal reasons, but he set up his own religion as a result.
Yeah. And then the papacy was in France, wasn't it? Wasn't there a point when there were two popes?
No idea, possibly.
Yeah, I'm sure there was the Roman Catholic Pope, and there was another. I'm sure there were two popes at a certain time. Like I said, I'm not an expert. It's mostly conjecture.
Caveat. But I think it's a true thing that also Christianity evolved to a point that it's not the driving force in any government, really.
Yeah.
The Catholic Church had to create Vatican City as their own country, in order to keep their power within that place, because Italy became its own governing country. And that's where, you know, I think it was Rousseau. Was it Rousseau? Oh, no, was it John Locke? Anyway, the concept of separation of church and government is much older in Western societies than it is in Eastern. So if you look at the Middle East, they are governed. The church and the state is essentially one person.
Yeah.
If you're a Sunni leader, you will discriminate against the Shias. If you're a Shia leader, you'll discriminate against the Sunnis. I mean, look at Iran. The Ayatollah Khamenei is not the governing ruler, but he has a lot of influence over the way that the government is ruled.
Mm-hmm.
People place a lot of emphasis on religion in the Middle East than they do in the Western countries. In Western countries, I mean, how many people are atheists? Shitload.
Yeah, it's probably, it's growing, isn't it?
Whereas, you know, you can be atheist. Whereas, because religion is so powerful in the Middle East, and this happened in Italy when the Catholics were ruling the country. If you were an atheist, I mean, who's the guy that invented the telescope?
Galileo.
Galileo was fucking under house arrest until he died. Heretic. I think Copernicus was also a heretic.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, when they were ruling the country, they jailed anyone that disagreed with them. And it's exactly the same as they have in Middle East. But
it's just another example of something having to go through a natural struggle in order to finally gain power.
Absolutely. But it's again, we're coming back to our original point, which is the freedom, the market, the free market of ideas. And eventually the best idea wins. But just because we got to that to that answer earlier than the Middle Easterners did, doesn't mean that we are more right or wrong. It just means we're there first.
It's like being an alien race and bestowing technology on another alien race, you know what I mean, alien to you, race that are just not ready for it, wouldn't know what to fucking do with it. Even to reverse engineer it, they wouldn't know what to do.
But this kind of brings us to the original point that we made, is that the oppressed become the oppressor. You know, the Americans think that they were the way of life in the Middle East was savage, so they wanted to modernize it. Well, who the fuck are you to tell them what to do? Because I can imagine, and I guarantee it, if the same happened to them, which it did, you know, the terrorist groups called the West infidels because of their way of life, and there's a war against them, and, you know, against the terrorists, because they both sides disagree with the right way of life. But either way, for the West to dictate to anyone else what they believe is the right way that anyone should live is completely imperialistic. It's completely wrong, because they don't know the evolution, the anthropological, cultural evolution of those countries. To carve up a territory into separate countries and say those are the rules now was completely a Western idea, just because they got used to it, just because France was a country. And even then, the territories of Germany, France, Austria, and Poland evolved over hundreds and hundreds of years. You know, Germany was a fucking tri-state country until it unified.
Yeah. Yeah, Bavarians,
etc. Well, I don't know anyone else. But, you know, it's not that long ago that they were completely separate countries until they unified.
Yeah, yeah.
It wasn't that long ago until Britain was three separate countries with three separate kings, two separate kings.
Well, you know, it wasn't that long ago when it was, what, five kingdoms? Northumbria, Sussex. Can't remember the others.
But I think overall,
Anglia.
Overall, I don't understand why we believe that we can go to another country and tell them their best way to manage themselves, given the fact that we have no real understanding or historical understanding of their culture, of what role religion plays. And of the cultural, well, I said culture. So
it would be really interesting if at this point in time right now to reach out to our listeners, and if anyone is from a different culture or, you know, has experience of any of the things that we've just talked about, it'd be really interesting to get their perspective on this.
Well, I want to invite my friend from Syria to actually talk to us about it, and I will arrange this maybe before the end of the year, because it will be really interesting to see what he has to say about this. And I think he will reflect our view that actually the West has no place in dictating the Middle East how to live their life.
Of course.
And it's very selective how they do it. They don't do it to the Saudi Arabians. They don't go to Saudi Arabia and tell them that they're wrong and that they should be using democracy. They allow them to be a kingdom, an oppressive kingdom, and yet...
But they don't really touch any of the UAE, do they?
No. Or Qatar, who is...
Bahrain.
Well, they did. Historically, they did. But, you know, it's a thing about political gain and financial gain.
Yeah,
but the issue is when you hide it as a rescue mission, that's when it becomes an issue. But you're right. How can they reach us, Tommy?
Well, they can send us a good old fashioned email.
Oh,
yarnspinnerspodcast@gmail.com. I don't know if some of you have been putting .co.uk. That's why we haven't got any yet.
Probably.
But you know, system error. Postmaster redelivery, just pop a .com on the end and you're sorted. Or you can hit us up on Twitter and Facebook with the same handle, which is @yarnspinners1. So
we're not a knitting society, by the way, which is why we've got the one. There are a lot of looking surprises with yarn spinners. But otherwise...
But yeah, it would be really interesting to hear from you guys, because this is quite a charged episode, this one.
I think
so.
I think we might alienated a few of our listeners. But look, this is all coming from love. I you know, for me, the more people get along, the better. And I think by being...
Oh, of course.
And by being overly...
I don't think that we're being insensitive. I think we're just raising issues to talk about them. Do you know what I mean? If you've got a problem about it, then come and talk to us.
Absolutely. And then this is the whole thing. It's the free market of ideas. No one's view is wrong. And we can, you know, we can share experiences and ideas and understand. And then at the end of it, there will be one prevailing idea. At the end of it.
Yeah.
There will be a winner, or there will be a compromise to say,
yep,
you can do that, I can do this, but it doesn't have to stop us from being equal.
Yeah. So, get in touch, guys. We want to talk to you.
Mwah. Right. Well, we're going to head off now, but peace out, y'all.
Peace, guys. We love you.
We do love you. We do love you. Cheers.